Hello there, my friends. It is time again to join the Fandom Podcast Network for a lovely outing of film, trivia and more. And we will be joined very shortly by the mulleted one from Queensland in Australia. He is a wonderful champion of movies and more. But until we get there, you are going to have to enjoy the classical sounds of the Royal Mulleted Orchestra.
Welcome to Fandom Podcast Network. This is Legal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s action cinema. Celebrating the heroes of yesterday, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Van Damme, all the way down to, of course, the big great action films that we all enjoyed on VHS, and of course, Betamax, with the loves of American Ninja, all the way through to Cyborg Cop and beyond. Here at Fandom Podcast Network's Legal Mullet Podcast, join Adam O'Brien as we celebrate action movie cinema.
G'day mate, how you going? Hello to all you action fans and mulleteers. There you go, there's a new term for you, the listener out there, the mulleteer. Because as you listen to the mullet, hopefully you're growing now a mullet as well, because why wouldn't you? I hope you've had a great week and welcome back to, of course, Fandom Podcast Network's celebration of 80s, 90s and 2000s action cinema. As we now look at today, a Dolph Lundgren and Brandon Lee classic from the 90s, Showdown in Little Tokyo. And just on the blurb on the front cover, it gives you everything you need to know. One's a warrior, one's a wise guy. They're two LA cops going after a gang of Japanese drug lords. Feet first. This is a movie that's very much in the vein of Big Trouble in Little China, Lethal Weapon, maybe even a little bit of Die Hard thrown there. It is a bit of a comedy. It's got action in it. Got great cast. We've got Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa as the main bad guy. We've also got Tia Carrera as a bit of a love interest in it as well. 76 minutes, folks. It's not a long one. All right, so you should probably find more trivia time chatting about this film than what we're going to get in there too. But it really is a classic. It was directed by Markel Lester, who you're probably better known for, of course, Class of 1984, and of course, the John Matrix, Arnold Schwarzenegger classic. Come on, guys, help me out here. From 1985, what did Arnold do? Come on, come on. Tell me now, do it. And it's, of course, Commando. That's right, with General Franklin Kirby. Hey, Franklin Kirby, find him now. Of course, classic film. And this is right up there with it. I really think that Mark's a solid director. He really packs in a lot of work in such a short time. Peter Stack from the San Francisco Chronicle called this a hoot for action fans. Slick, funny, and beautifully shot. So there you go. So it really gives you a bit of an eye into those. There's quite a bit of martial arts in this as well. It is a martial arts film as well as an action film, but we'll go into that very, very, very soon. So I hope you've been keeping up also on the sister podcast of this. Of course, that is the Mullet Guild as we talk June, because in the next week, we're going to have the first trailer, a teaser trailer dropping. Brian Herbert today has just talked about that. We're going to talk about that in the news segment very, very soon. But before we get into it, here's how you can contact me, the Lethal Mullet, and also find the show on the network.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, my name is Gowan. Follow the Lethal Mullet here
on Fandom Podcast Network's master channel at fpnet.podbean.com, or subscribe on the Podbean app where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. New look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. You can also check out The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Lethal Mullet. You can also check out this show and all the others like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. make sure you follow me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Now it's time for the latest action news from the cinema and martial arts movies and more, all here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Alright, so no beating around the bush, we're going to get straight into it. Okay, obviously June trailer should be out around about the 17th or 14th, we're hearing, on a digital release somehow, somewhere. And of course, this is our first indication of what Denis Villeneuve's been putting together. Can't wait, I'm really pumped. It's going to be huge. Get ready, Star franchise, to get owned. Yes, you, Star Wars, I love you, but you're going to get owned. And Star Trek, I love you too, buddy, but you know what? You're going to get owned. This is the big granddaddy, and you is about to get owned. I'm telling you, it's as simple as that. Denis Villeneuve is a classic master of film. He's not only somebody that's going to give you all the surprises, action, all that sort of stuff, the intrigue from the novel. You know, he's got his own voice that he's going to be putting out in this, and I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. But these visuals that we've had from Variety only giving us a little indication of what's coming. Yeah, get ready. This is going to be the Blade Runner 2049 of 2020, so stay tuned. And Brian Herbert today just posted a little thing out. He said that fans have been letting him know that, giving a heads up, like he has been, because he has. Every time there's been a bit of news coming, he's like, oh, you know, you might want to check out this next thing that's coming up here, and might just be hashtag June, hashtag June massive news. And, of course, that comes up. So now he's kind of like, well, I'm not going to let you know when it's coming, but something's coming. So I think it's a big hint that we're going to see a trailer in the next week, folks. So stay tuned. It's going to be massive. The other news is the Matt Reeves guy behind those fantastic Apes films, the last two, even though Rupert White's film was damn good too, the Rise of the Blood of the Apes. Of course, we had The War and, of course, The Dawn. Was it The Dawn, then The War, and The War and The Dawn, End of the Dawn and The War for the Planet of the Apes. Both great films, fantastic. Kind of like the Nolan verse, if you like, of Apes films. Fantastic. Matt Reeves, mate, hats off to you, brother. You've done a fantastic job. But what I will say is this. Matt Reeves is about to put out, obviously, the Batman first in a trilogy. Not exactly linked in with the other films. It's its own little Batman universe. It's going to be great. Is starting a Gotham PD show as well. So police department show. So when I looked at it, I'm like, come on, we've just had how many, 4 or 5 seasons of Gotham? And they finally had a Batman after that, obviously, because Bruce is like, I got my stuff now, man. I can be the Batman. And of course he did, you know, he's gone out and done his thing. But Gotham was more, I think, aimed at sort of a teenage audience, you know, it's more of a, I suppose, that sort of middle of the road. And you've got to say that DC's doing some fantastic stuff on TV. In some respects, a hell of a lot better than what they're doing on film. I mean, what is DC doing? They're all over the shop. You've got Wonder Woman, fantastic. You've got the likes of, Aquaman, amazing. I mean, that's a great, great bunch of films. And then you've got the Snyderverse, which some of it's really good. Some of it's, what the hell were you thinking, Zach, you know? But there's no fault in his logic when it comes to a very serious take on these characters. Man of Steel is a beautiful film, right? Batman v Superman, the theatrical, is, you know, and but the other cut that he's put out on Blu-ray makes sense. Actually, it's a bloody good film. So hats off to you for that one. And we talk about the director of Watchmen, which is such an amazing adaptation. It even makes more sense than the comic. All right, Mr. Alan Moore, am I doing you all right? I'm listening to you. What you got for me, yeah? That's right. What I'm saying is that Alan Moore, I love his work. I mean, V for Vendetta is probably his best, in my opinion. But Watchmen, it's better on the movie. The movie made more sense, all right? Instead of that giant squid, it's a squid. It's going to squash the planet. You know, But then again, getting back to, you know, 300 as well, adapting Frank Miller's work. This guy knows his visuals. He's amazing. Story-wise, yeah, he's a bit all over the place, but he was working on a bigger, broader canvas that he, and I think with Justice League. I want to see what we're getting next year in 2021 with this. I'm pumped. It's going to be great. And it's going to be some hell good action. And, you know, I think even, you know, Ben Affleck's not my favorite Batman. Sure. But he was brutal. He was brilliant. And it's a great car. The Batmobile, and that's great. So I'm keen. I'm glad to see what's happening. And I'm glad to see that Matt Reeves is bringing back Batman's world to the small screen. Because really, let's face it, Batman would work better on a TV show. Think about it. Put Batman on there, get a TV actor behind it, and make him the Dark Knight bloody detective. He's a detective, for crying out loud. Let him do some detecting. All right? Doesn't just mean he's Jason Bourne with a cape and a cowl and some expensive gadgets, you know. He's not James Bond. Nolan was literally doing James bloody Bond. That's what he was doing. It was James Bond. Now, I don't want to do James Bond, yeah? But what I want to do, I want to do a kind of, let's do a tricky James Bond with Batman, yeah? And that's what he was doing. Come on. I mean, that's what it was. So, folks, that's where my mind is at with that one too. Now, quick update and news on this here show. We have some great stuff coming up, and it's going to be really, really, you know, look down memory lane when it comes to action. We're going to be looking at some ninja flicks in the next couple of weeks and into the next couple of months. We're going to be looking at movies like Enter the Ninja, classic Franco Nero, Shokosugi, and more. Of course, this is the classic that got Canada Films pretty much on the mark with the ninja boom before Michael Dudikoff, get the Dudikoff, went nuts and did, of course, American Ninja 2, then said, hell with ninjas, then did Avenging Force. We're going to even do that movie on here too. We've already done American Ninja, so we'll do that one. We're also covering some classics from Canada Films' catalog. Also, if you're into Jean-Claude Van Damme, the muscles from Brussels. You know, that guy. The guy that was going to be the Predator but wasn't. Well, we're going to be teeing off some classics of his. We've done Bloodsport, folks. We're going to do the next one in line. Cyborg. Yeah, it's not a great one. But it's a lot of fun to chat about. We're going to look at that. We're also going to look at why the Blu-ray of that movie is still $32 here in Australia. And then we'll move on, obviously, to some other classics like Kickboxer and, of course, one of my favourites, Wrong Bloody Bet. That's a great little movie, that. And, of course, we've got Death Warrant. We are going to be going through the Van Damme classics this year here on the show. So stay tuned, folks. It is going to be massive all here on the one, the only Lethal Mullet podcast. Time to get into the pub, folks. Here we go. Alrighty, mate. Time to go down to the pub for a pint, a chat, action movies and more. Here on the Lethal Mullet podcast. The film in question today is a 1991 American action film. Now, directed by, of course, Marco Lester and produced by Lester and Martin E. Kahn. The film is, of course, Showdown in Little Tokyo. This film is one I've often rewatched, I don't know how many times, because there's just so much goodness in this film. It is, first of all, a buddy cop action film. It is also a martial arts film. It is something that has a little bit of everything. Now, it also has some background actors in this that you know from some classic films. So we'll get into that. And we'll also get into, at the end of the day, one of the big things about the film, which is, of course, the late, great Brandon Lee. In a role that's probably a little bit different in some ways, too, for him at the time. Now, Showdown Little Tokyo was released by Warner Brothers. And, of course, Warner Brothers Pictures at the time was banging out a lot of action films. And, of course, they had the rights to films like, of course, like Lethal Weapon. And they were known very well for Lethal Weapon. Actually, out here in Australia alone, when you went to Movie World here on the Gold Coast, which is that great theme park attached to the Village Roadshow Studios area, you could actually take a little ride through the studios. And there was a Foley area where the little carriage that would take you out would stop and you'd all get out and you'd actually watch people do the Foley scene of Lethal Weapon 2, where you have basically, it's Leo Getz getting introduced to Riggs and Murtaugh for the first time in the hotel. And he's talking about how to launder money and all that sort of stuff. And, of course, there's an attempt on his life. But what's great about it is that you actually get to see how that's put together. And, of course, that's part of what's great about Warner Brothers, such a big studio at the time, punching out these amazing films. And we get to see it. A lot of those out here, and plus with those, a lot of the stars come to Australia and actually really go through what it was to make these films. Of course, the film itself has a fantastic poster. If you haven't seen the cover of the DVD itself, well, definitely check out the pod art, because we've got the DVD in question in the pod art. But what's great is you've got this great Showdown in Little Tokyo sort of font that's just fantastic. And then you've got, obviously, Brandon Lee in a pose, sort of a martial arts-like pose, very much sort of reminiscent of his father there a little bit. And then, of course, you got this Zen pose by Dolph Lundgren, which kind of says a lot. Behind him, though, you have the Yakuza tattoos of the one, the only, Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa, which we're going to talk about tonight as well. The movie was written by Stephen Glantz and Kelly Brattlestreet. I hope I've pronounced that right. I'm sorry. And, of course, music by David Michael Frank. It was shot by director of photography, cinematography by Mark Irwin. It was released in August 23, 1991, and has a runtime of 79 minutes. Crazy. It says 76 on the DVD, folks. Now, the budget was $8 million, but they only made $2.3 million. So this is not a movie that was a raging success, okay? But it is still a hell of a good film. And one that I think, you know, over time, it grows on you as well. It's a film that pretty much follows the classic tropes of action films, buddy cop films of that time. But also, there's a heavy sort of burden that Dolph Lundgren's character plays in this too, where a lot of his past gets dragged up and is actually brought into play with the bad guy in this too, Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa. So let's get into that. Let's chat about where that leads us and, of course, some of the great scenes in this film.
Warner Brothers Pictures brings you a warrior and a wise guy. The Los Angeles cops mix punches and kicks and punchlines in a complete knockdown, gundown showdown in Little Tokyo. Dolph Lundgren and Brandon Lee mix an American samurai sense and Eastern tradition and mix it with Brandon Lee's Valley Dude quipster. A lot of fight in one bang. Together, they have a tough war against Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa's Yakuza and ensure the safe life of Tia Carrera. Directed by Mark L. Lester, this is the film for you. Commando was the past. This is the showdown in Little Tokyo.
It's time to talk about the cast here, folks. A great, heroic, amazing cast. Dolph Lundgren, you know very well, started his days back in the old days of James Bond. Of course, with A View to a Kill. Then, of course, battled Sylvester Stallone in Rocky IV. Then, of course, had an amazing career as kind of a B-grade action star, The Punisher, obviously Masters of the Universe, worked on from that and pretty much worked his way through Pentathlon, Men of War, and of course this classic 1991 actioner. He's a Kyokushinkai black belt, multiple Dans at this stage, so not calling Daniel, we're talking about Dans as in belt structure in the Japanese arts, or in this case Kyokushinkai, which is one of the most full-on karate styles. If you're a karate stylist like myself, I study Goju-Ryu. You know, it's a little bit different. Kyokushinkai is really in your face, tough, but also very centered art. And of course, perfectly built for the likes of the amazing Dolph Lundgren. Brandon Lee, obviously, is in this too. So Dolph plays Sergeant Chris Kenner, and Brandon Lee plays Detective Johnny Murata. And what's great about Brandon Lee in this, he's the wise guy. He's the funny guy. You don't expect that because obviously Rapid Fire and other like Laser Mission, he's kind of, he's the tough guy. But He's the very reserved tough guy. In this, we also have Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa. He's in everything, folks. This is one of the great character actors of our time. Shang Tsung, Mortal Kombat. He's in Stargate, Star Trek. What is he in? Planet of the Apes, the Tim Burton film he's in. Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa is, to this day, one of my absolute favorite actors when it gets out there. Obviously, he plays in this the head of the Yakuza gang that's a menace in the area of LA. He plays Yoshida. And T. Carrera plays Minako Okeya. And T is great in this. She's obviously a bit of a damsel in distress in this, but she holds her own at the same time. She's a singer at the local club in this. Also, if you remember a certain member of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cast, you'll know this guy who plays Sato in this. He's also in The Hunted, if you like your ninja flicks. That is, of course, the one, the only, Toshiro Obata. Now, Toshiro is a very well-renowned martial artist. I do believe you'll find he studies Aikido and pretty much very much a master of the sword as well, Kenjutsu. I'm not sure if he does Iaido as well, but it's all in there. As Tanaka, Philip Tan, very good actor. Well, that's in a lot of early 90s to late 90s sort of area. There's a lot of work. We also have, of course, Professor Toru Tanaka. Now, of course, we've talked about Toru before when he was on, obviously, The Perfect Weapon with Jeff Speakman as the lead villain in that. And Toru's in this, he's Yoshida's bodyguard in this. And, of course, he's in The Running Man. Again, very strong, very big, but actually pretty quick for what he is. Last Action Hero as well he was in. Now, Roger Ewan plays one of the many kickboxers at the start. You may know him from Shanghai Noon. He appeared in that as the main bad guy. He was in Bulletproof Monk, where he played one of the first monks at the start of the film. He's very good. Fantastic performer, stunt coordinator. Obviously, he's also a martial arts fighter in a lot of films too. Very talented guy. Batman Begins he was in. He's also in Skyfall as one of the bodyguards. But again, Roger Winston Yun, and he's very, very fantastic at everything he does. I find that particularly in Shanghai Noon, he steals a lot of the scenes. I mean, we've got Jackie Chan already in there. Also got the likes of, obviously, Jason Connery, so Sean Connery's son as well. And you've got all that. And of course, you got Owen Wilson mumbling his lines all through the movie. But it's the artistry. And just, I think, too, Roger has got a great charisma for the screen. So he really steals a lot of those performances just through that. And I just love Bulletproof Monk, folks. That's one we will talk about. I've always had a soft spot for that. I watched Bulletproof Monk when it came out when I was at Graphic Arts College. And I was sitting there hammering away on Photoshop, doing what I had to do to get the ad out on time the next day, down to the printers. And I just remember Bulletproof Monk was the one time I could get out, get my mind off art at the time, and just watch some action and stuff. It was great because, again, you also get Chow Yun-Fat in it, of course, it was great. It's a bit of fun. And, of course, the humor in it, too. It's kind of a Hellboy feel to that film, just in the tone as well, too. I don't think I've ever read the comic. Anyway, getting back to it, obviously, Simon Ree is in this as Ito as well. Simon Ree, you'll know from his other work as well in the field. Again, incredibly talented and physically gifted. Let's just put it that way. So there's an early draft of this that went out, and obviously I think this is one of those films that was just shopped around, picked up, but worked for those actors really, really well. Again, you got two actors that were up and coming at the time. Dolph was really delving into leading films at the time, like Dolph Lundgren had done in Australia, Punisher, and then did I Come in Peace, which is another one we'll talk about. Out here, we call it something else, but I Come in Peace was a great film. Again, buddy cop action film. Dolph Lundgren plays off these quite well. He can play the serious guy, but he can also play, the smart aleck as well. But Dark Angel was what that was called out here, and it worked really well. That was a solid film. You've got a great bad guy in that one too. It kind of feels like Suburban Commando a little bit, actually, the way it was placed out. There's three movies, very similar. Dark Angel, Suburban Commando, and a certain Jesse Ventura flick, which we won't mention. We will cover on this show very soon, but again, it's one that you'll know it when we talk about it, put it that way. The film actually had a massive 104 pages in the script, dropped back to 95 when they went to shooting it as well. And also there's quite a bit that in there that has obviously, you know, spreading out the scenes a lot more. And I think the big thing too would be having a look at things like, you know, the Dolph Lundgren's parents getting killed and stuff like that by a certain bad guy in the film. Showdown is set in Los Angeles in Long Beach, California, and it was shot in 53 days. They started shooting this in January 14 to March 8th, 1991. Now, just sort of think about the time period of that film. That film was coming out at a time where Seagal was just up and coming. I mean, I think Mark for Death hadn't quite come out at that time. We had, you know, a lot of, I think the biggest thing is in this time period, we've got Van Damme just kicking off pretty much, like he would have done Death Warrant, I think, and just had that about released. So we had films like, obviously, Out for Justice, Hard to Kill with Seagal. We had, and even to a certain degree, Perfect Weapon, which was going to sort of launch, obviously, Jesse Pinkman's career. We got Street Night. Another one we'll cover here, folks, soon, too. It's a great little flick, too. And, you know, we got a different stylist. You know, martial arts was the big thing at the time. It's hard to believe back then that that was the way things were heading. And we got those different things. And I think that was what made it very interesting at the time for that. So we'll get into the production, how that went, here in the cafe.
Please hang up and try again.
Now it's time for the Lethal Mullet Cafe, as we chill back, relax, and look at the trivia. All the detail, the nitty-gritty of the films we are celebrating. All right, let's get into it. So, the editor was by the name of Michael Elliott, brought into the film by Warner Brothers. He'd done the same job earlier on another film, a Steven Seagal movie, where they had to basically cut, paste, move things around. And basically, the production company, Warner Brothers, weren't happy with the early cut that went out. So they basically took a lot of the exposition, a lot of the stuff when it come to Kenner and obviously his previous partners and, of course, the Nelson character. So scenes cut in this version were the introduction to Kenner, his former partner, Yoel Soto, Nelson, obviously, played by Ernie Lively. And then there were some more scenes with Lundgren and Lee leading up to a gunfight a little bit later in the boxing arena. So Kenner, he's basically put in the ringer by his boss as well in some of those scenes. So there's more than about probably 10 minutes that were going to be in the film. So it would have been a much longer cut, closer to 90 minutes. Then the famous director of Nemesis, his famous editor, Stuart Baird, who did a lot of cuts for films over the years after, you know, production people were displeased with them. Stuart Baird took another cut at, and basically he re-edited Showdown even further down, and it got down to from 90 minutes down to 79. So you can see the final cut of Marco Lester, you know, it's almost a TV episode if you look at it. So, but it's tight. It's great. I mean, it's got a great intro, obviously, with the fight arena. You know, you got these, you know, martial artists out there. Lundgren towering over everybody. I mean, most of those people are probably under the 5'7". He comes out there, kicks the crap out of everybody. And he's got that whopping huge desert eagle in the film too. no, he's just massive. The soundtrack for the film came out in December 11, so a couple of months after, on CD. And it's done by David Michael Frank. And the main title is what gets me. It feels like a TV show title. Da-da, 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 da-da. And you got that little bass line. I loved it. And still to this day, when I think of, or if I see the poster or the cover to this CD, I think of the music. Yeah, it's not the greatest soundtrack at all, but it's memorable. That is why it's so good. And obviously, it's got 16 tracks and it came out quite well. So obviously, the box office, let's just say that it had a little bit of a theatrical run. I can't actually remember it having a run here in Australia. It might have been in Sydney and Melbourne. Whether it had one here in Australia, in my region, probably not. But we did see it in 1992 in basically a director video out here on VHS. It was all over the shelves, very popular. You went to Blockbuster Video Easy, Civic Video, all those sort of places back in the day, and you could find it everywhere. Now, the big thing about this one is it didn't do well in that release, but after the passing of Brandon Lee, obviously he did a movie, 94, The Crow, and unfortunately died on the set of that film. There was a big surge in wanting to see the films that he'd done prior to The Crow. So, of course, this one took precedence. I mean, it is one of the more commercial, fun ones that he did. And everyone got into it. Everyone enjoyed it. I see, it largely got negative reviews, though. Critically, it had no spirit. The New York Times said, described it as violent but spiritless. It's not getting more than 33% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, we ain't fans of Rotten Tomatoes here, folks. Yeah, we don't believe in the tomato meter. You can go squash your tomatoes, Rotten Tomatoes. You're a joke. That's it. You're a joke. You can't rule the roost, one website, you know. I know they all do, but we don't care about tomatoes, mate, eh? What we do care about is the Hallenbeck scale, and this film gets a whopping big 3.5 out of 5 on the Hallenbeck scale. It's a better scale than squashed tomatoes. There you go. Check it out. What we do care about, though, is the impact this film had. So what they did do is, this is on late nights out here in Australia. You would see it like 11 at night on free-to-air TV. It's constantly on streaming as well. It's quite popular for what it was. And I think one of the things is, looking back on it, you know, the DVD release did quite well. The big thing is, there's, you know, been a lot of people talk about Cary Hiroyuki Tagawa's performance in this. And it's quite good. He's kind of like a Bond villain in it. You know, he's maniacal. He's extravagant. He's got a massive house in it. Huge. And he's got his Bond girl, which is Tia Carrera, in this. He's quite good. And it's a bit of a cult classic now, thanks to that. What's great in it too is the martial artistry in it too. Obviously, Brandon Lee doing some great stuff in this. And actually, you look at his work, particularly in this, there's a lot of gymnastics involved in his work, especially when they go to the strip club where they're having sushi on the top of naked women. And of course, they just rip it apart and go to town. But one of the great things about it is some of the great flipping work and the flip kicks that Brandon Lee does in this. Obviously, we've got some great scenes in this too, where we see Dolph Lundgren go through and pretty much do a John Matrix, but Japanese style, as in he's getting the samurai outfit. He's really living up to that sort of artistry in it. But also, one of the great parts of this too, I think, is some of the one-liners, which we're about to get into, folks, here on the show. Let's start with a scene with, of course, Brandon Lee and Dolph. So we've got Johnny, played by, of course, Brandon, and Chris, played by Dolph Lundgren. So Johnny says, "Kenner, just in case we don't get killed, I want to tell you, you have the biggest dick I've ever seen on a man." And without any expression, he nods. Dolph goes,
thanks. I don't know what to say. He goes, how about don't get killed? Don't get killed. You too.
Again, it's cheesy. Whether it works or not, who knows? There's some great stuff. Kenna says some words in Japanese. And Brandon goes, what did it mean?
Roughly translated, out of the frying pan and boned up the ass with a red hot poker.
There you have it. So again, the script is tight. There's some really great lines in this script.
Dolph goes, I like that car, I like that girl, and I'd like to cut off certain parts of Yoshida's anatomy.
And Brandon says, you know, you got a fixation, pal. Again, this is a very lethal weapon. One of the other ones that kind of doesn't play quite as well, Brandon Lee says, listen, we do this right clean, like a cop in the 20th century, not some samurai warrior. We're going to nail this guy, and when we get done, we're going to go off, eat fish off those naked chicks. So you can see there's some cheesy stuff that works, some that doesn't. Then we've got Brandon Lee saying, what are we going to call this in the police report?
How about community relations?
We blew up the crime scene, killed the suspects. So just some of the delivery in this, you know, is not quite up there with the others. But there is some great points in this too. So overall, some great lines. All right, so let's look at some of the trivia brought to you by, of course, IMDb.com. Best place when you find that. So all the swords used in the film were replicas, with the exception of ones used by Dolph Lundgren's character when he slices through bamboo. That would have to be an authentic, of course, samurai sword. It's the only one that's going to cut through it. Dolph Lundgren's leather jacket in the movie has the kanji of Kyokushin on the sleeve. So a little bit of a hint into who this guy is. The movie studio was disappointed with the first cut. With Michael Lester, and Michael Lester started to finance and sell his movies himself to keep control of them after this. The first Dolph Lundgren movie to be released straight to video in countries such as Germany, France, Spain, and Japan. And I have to say it, folks, also in Australia, that happened here too. Philip Tan, Simon Reed, George Chung, and Al Leong all appeared in the Lethal Weapon franchise. Again, guys, these are fantastic actors who are out of LA. And you're going to find them in a lot of the action movies of this time. Body count for the movie is 58. One earlier uncredited draft of the script was written by Steve Sharon. It also written the Dirty Harry movie, The Deadpool, in 1988. It's a bit of a classic. I wonder if that was the one with Liam Neeson and a certain Mr. Jim Carrey. I'm pretty sure that was. Jonathan Lemkin wrote the final shooting script. That would be the short one, folks. That's why we got what we got. Lundgren and Tagawa also worked on another film together called Bridge of Dragons, which is actually a pretty damn good little flick. I remember seeing that a couple of years ago on straight to DVD, and it's quite fun for what it is. This is the fifth film and first American film of actor and martial artist Brandon Lee. Of course, the son of Bruce Lee. Red Dragon also features in Showdown in Little Tokyo and is a movie in Hannibal Lecter series. So there you go, a little bit of insight into the film itself. G'day folks, hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. Endzone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything. all covering the fashion as well, hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.